Our lament comes from Mark. Then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." Readings from Isaiah. "Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you that have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me, and eat what food is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen so that you may live. I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. See, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. See, you shall call nations that you do not know, and nations that do not know you shall run to you. Because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you."
In the name of Jesus. Well, this Lent, we are taking a look at lament and praise. And today we want to think about lament and praise as personal experience. The lament passage this morning from Mark is actually the gospel appointed for this day. Right before this reading, Jesus has asked the disciples, "What do you think, or who do you think I am?" And Peter jumps in with the answer. He says, "You're the Messiah." Messiah means the anointed one. In ancient Israel, kings were always anointed, put oil on their head. It was like the oath of office in our culture. It's the thing that makes a king a king. And so if you're saying that someone is Messiah, you're saying that they've been singled out for something important. In just a few weeks on Palm Sunday, we'll remember that the crowds in Jerusalem for the Passover observance nearly started a riot as they greeted Jesus as Son of David. They see him as the descendant and the heir apparent of Israel's favorite king, the one who might restore them to political freedom, break the bondage of Roman rule that was oppressing them so violently. But then Jesus goes on to tell the disciples that his story is going to end with suffering, rejection, and death. And Peter doesn't want to hear it. Why? Well, because when Peter says that Jesus is Messiah, suffering, rejection, and death just aren't a part of the story that Jesus envisions. Calling Jesus Messiah is meant to be a sign of hope. Things are supposed to get better. The oppressive tyranny of Rome is supposed to come to an end. I mean, what good is a dead Messiah? But then Jesus rebukes Peter in the strongest possible way. "Get behind me, Satan," he says. Jesus says, saying there's no way to get around this. Jesus understands himself to be Messiah by getting entangled into a whole lot of pain. And that gives Jesus the opening to tell the disciples that they too are going to need to take up a cross if they want to be entangled with him in this new thing that God is doing. This story, filled with lament, is going to get personal for each of them. Now, when you and I think about the cross, Most often, I think we see it as the sign of God's love for us and the world. It's the instrument of salvation and hope for sinners. We gladly put it in the front of our churches. We mount it on rooftops as a beacon and identifier of who we are. We mark our babies and each other with its shape. We live as people of the cross. But what would the cross have meant to the disciples as they listened to Jesus in today's reading? For them, the cross was an instrument of terror used by Roman overlords to torture to death any person who acted as if he could overthrow the Caesar and Roman law. These deaths by torture didn't take place in some basement cell of a secret prison. No, the Romans executed their enemies in public on land adjacent to the main road in and out of town so that every passerby could get the message. You think you're going to get out of Roman rule? Well, think again. The cross was a way of controlling an empire with state-sponsored terror. And if that's what the cross means, as disciples hear Jesus' words, then it's as if Jesus is saying, so you think I am Messiah, you call me that, okay, but this is where it will get us, me and you. Jesus doesn't discourage his students from using that title for him. He just says, this is the way the story's going to go for all of us. And it does. Jesus keeps pushing the plot of his narrative until the Romans finally decide that he is a threat to their rule. He's crucified in mockery as king of the Jews. But the other part of Jesus' message is just as true. Those who identify themselves as followers of Jesus after his death and resurrection quickly find themselves in deep, deep trouble. Trouble with the government, trouble with their neighbors. Many of them suffer. More than a few of them lose their lives as martyrs. What Jesus said is true. You want to follow me? You'll have to take up a cross. That's the way this works. Who wants to get entangled in pain? We have a built-in response to avoid it. I think that's why this past year has been so challenging for all of us. There are so many ways that people are suffering in the midst of this pandemic. Over 28 million Americans have experienced the disease firsthand. 500,000 of us are dead. And that means what? 5 million people or more who've personally suffered the loss of someone they love. Maybe you have personally experienced that kind of loss. And jobs are gone. People whose lives were once reasonably comfortable are now hopelessly behind on rent and mortgage. Folks who a year ago were volunteering at food pantries are now in those same lines to get help. And through it all, we've been cut off from each other, unable to give or receive a hug or to be with the people who could support us through all of this. So today's reading from the book of Isaiah is the perfect example of praise for people like us who need to deal with the worries of a pandemic. Food for free. You don't have to wonder where your next meal or where your next paycheck is going to come from if food is free. No more embarrassing trips to the pantry. This reading envisions a much, much better world beyond our own. It describes a place that's been liberated from all the anxieties and sadness that seem to enshroud our planet during this pandemic. You know, very often when I am in crisis, my cry to God sounds like this: get me out of here. I need you, God, to resolve my problems so I can get back to the normal routine. Praise is going to be a whole lot easier once this suffering is behind me. I guess I often view lament and praise as a kind of before and after. once I get past my crisis, I can leave lament and get back to the hymns of praise. And the Christian story seems to validate that way of looking at life. Easter comes after Good Friday, right? You make it to paradise only after you die. That's the way we tell the story. Earth's but a desert drear, we sing, heaven is my home. And so lament, then praise, becomes the plot of the story we tell ourselves. And in times like this, when life becomes painful, we plead with God to come and save us. We want to leave the landscape of lament so we can finally arrive at a place where praise once again seems possible. In Matthew's gospel, the evangelist reports another saying of Jesus that goes like this. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." For most of my life, I found those words rather troubling. On the one hand, Jesus seems to acknowledge the problems that we face. He knows that he's talking to people who, like us, are worn out in a pandemic. "Come to me," he says, "you're weary, you're tired, you've got a heavy load, you need rest." And that's true, right? But then he says, "Take my yoke." And that trips me up. "Here," says Jesus, "you should carry something else on your back, and I'm going to lay it on you." And that's not helpful. I'm weary, I'm tired, I don't need more weight put on me. When Jesus talks about a yoke, I can't help but think of his cross. In the time of Jesus, criminals who were condemned to crucifixion were forced to carry on their backs the horizontal crossbeam on which they would die, carry it through the public streets to the place of their execution. Carrying a yoke and carrying a cross are pretty much the same thing. But we've got to think about a yoke. What a yoke does. A yoke distributes workload among several animals. A yoked team of oxen can pull a load no single animal could carry by itself. When Jesus asks us to take his yoke, I don't think he means to lay extra burdens on us. I think he's offering to help carry our load. He personally gets under our burdens and lifts the weight off us so he can shoulder it with us. And maybe that's what it means also to carry his cross. We don't do it by ourselves. We do it with Jesus. We do it with each other through this pandemic and beyond. We do it for the sake of others beyond this community of faith. You see, lament and praise are not before and after. Life isn't a matter of slugging it out in this veil of tears until we can get to heaven. What a shame if we would waste a lifetime feeling miserable here only because we were certain something better is coming. God isn't going to wait for a better day to share life with us. God doesn't give us Easter like a carrot to pull us through Good Fridays. Lament and praise are woven together into the fabric of life. They're the warp and woof of human experience. God weaves us into the divine totally, the pain as well as the pleasure, so that our burdens and joys can be a part of what God is, and we can be upheld by the life of God. And God weaves us together in community, a community of cross and open tomb, so that our songs of lament and our hymns of praise grow into a chorus. And God gifts us to the world so that the whole planet, in good times and bad times, can know that God is always near. Carry a cross, yes. But you're going to do it with Jesus, And he's going to carry most of the weight. Food for free? Absolutely. The bread and wine are already set before you. God's love is grace, and it doesn't cost a cent. You don't have to wait for a better day. Even in this pandemic moment, you are not alone. Here, now, we do it all, lament and praise together in the name of Jesus.